China warns that the U.S. will pay the price if the House Speaker visits Taiwan hours after Washington said Nancy Pelosi has the right to visit the island. Iran condemns the latest U.S. sanctions that target the country's foreign trade, saying that Washington is addicted to instrumental use of sanctions. And the U.S. chief warns the world is, in his words, one miscalculation away from nuclear annihilation. Hello and welcome to This Is News. Thanks for joining us. China says the U.S. will pay the price in case House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visits Taiwan. Beijing says the visit undermines China's sovereign security and that Washington should bear the responsibility. The warning comes hours after Washington said Pelosi is entitled to travel to Taiwan. The White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby said Washington sees no reason for Beijing to turn the visit into a crisis. The U.S. House Speaker is now on a tour of East Asia. She would become the highest-ranking U.S. official to visit Taiwan if her trip goes ahead. Beijing considers Taiwan as part of its territory, and it opposes Washington's growing engagement with Taipei. Iran has condemned the latest round of U.S. sanctions targeting the country's foreign trade, saying that addiction to sanctions is an indicator of America's hegemonic system. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman said the new bans prove that a change in U.S. administrations does not change the country's sanctions policy. Nasser Kanani said the administration of Joe Biden still sticks to the failed maximum pressure policy of its predecessor, even amid the ongoing efforts to revive the 2015 deal. He added that Tehran will take firm and immediate measures to minimize the negative impact of such bans on the country's trade and economy. His remarks came after earlier on Monday, the U.S. blacklisted six companies that it claimed helped Iran export petrochemicals to East Asia. They included three Hong Kong-based trading companies, an Emirati firm, and two shipping companies. Also in Iran, the foreign minister says the U.S. and its allies try to impose their self-styled values on other nations, even as they violate the basic norms of human rights. Hossein Amir Abdullahian says the U.S. and some other Western countries have also used terrorism as a pretext to expand their weapon sales over the past two decades. Amir Abdullahian made the remarks at a gathering on human rights hosted by the Iranian judiciary. The top diplomat also talked about the issue of Palestine. He called for a UN-monitored referendum across the occupied territories so that the original residents of Palestine can vote on the future. Amir Abdullahian, however, added that Israel only understands, quote, the language of force and resistance. The U.S. says it has killed the al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri in an airstrike in Afghanistan's capital, Kabul. The announcement was made by the U.S. President Joe Biden, who claimed that there have been no civilian casualties. He called Zawahiri a vicious and determined killer. The al-Qaeda leader was killed in a CIA drone strike on his residence over the weekend. The Taliban government has confirmed the strike. Condemned the strike as a violation of international principles and the 2020 agreement on the U.S. troop withdrawal. Zawahiri was a suspected mastermind of the September 11, 2001 attacks, which killed nearly 3,000 people in the U.S. He took over al-Qaeda after its original leader, Osama bin Laden, was killed by U.S. special forces in Pakistan in 2011. The U.N. chief warns that the world is, in his words, one miscalculation away from nuclear annihilation. Antonio Guterres says the risk of a nuclear war is now at a level unseen since the Cold War. Guterres also says geopolitical weapons are reaching new highs, with 13,000 nukes piled up in arsenals around the world. He made the remarks during a conference to review the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Eight countries, including the five permanent members of the U.S. Security Council, along with the Israeli regime, possess nuclear arms. The U.S. is the only country in the world to have used nukes. Over the past few days, it's been revealed that a charitable fund run by Britain's Prince Charles accepted a large donation from a questionable Saudi family in 2013. News of the seven-figure donation from members of Osama bin Laden's family was first reported by center-right newspaper The Sunday Times. As Saeed Purza reports, controversial donations of this kind to the prince's charities are not without precedent.
Prince Charles, Britain's heir to the throne, in yet more hot water for accepting questionable donations to his charitable fund. this time from a family whose name brings back horrifying memories. Bakr and Shafiq bin Laden, wealthy construction magnates and half-brothers of the dead Al-Qaeda terrorist leader Osama bin Laden, reportedly donated $1.7 million to a charitable fund that the prince is the patron of.
The future king allegedly greenlighted the donation after meeting one of the bin Laden brothers in the palatial building behind me known as Clarence House in 2013, only 2 years after U.S. Special Forces killed a 9/11 mastermind in the east of Pakistan.
The prince's office denies any wrongdoing, saying the decision to accept the money was made by the fund's trustees. To those observing the royal family for years, something bigger is at play.
What I think is happening is, in Britain at the moment, we're in a transition going from the Elizabethan age, if you will, to a new era in the royal family, which is Prince Charles. And I think what they're doing is cleaning out the closet and getting rid of any skeletons which could shadow or cast a shadow over his accession to the throne.
In February, claims of a cash for honor scandal involving a Saudi businessman, a police investigation into another of Charles's charitable foundations ensued. And before that, reports that between 2011 and 2015, the prince accepted donations totaling $3.2 million to his charity from a former Qatari prime minister, with the cash delivered in shopping bags.
The optics aren't good. And if this money was being received in the Kremlin or in Tehran or another country that's at odds with the West, you can imagine the outcry and the pompous invective that would be spouted towards those countries.
It remains to be seen if the prince will be investigated over this latest revelation. And with an upcoming documentary featuring the life of his deceased former wife, Princess Diana, scrutiny of the 73-year-old royal will intensify. Saeed Purza, London.
Russia's energy giant Gazprom has halted gas supply to Latvia, adding it to the list of countries that had been excluded from Russian gas. Gazprom, in a statement, said that Riga was violating supply conditions. Latvia, like Poland, Bulgaria, Finland, the Netherlands, and Denmark, needs to either abide by Moscow's conditions or seek alternatives to Russian gas.
Natural gas is one of several commodities massively impacted by the Russia-Ukraine conflict. The European Union receives about 40% of its natural gas from Russian pipelines, about a quarter of which flow through Ukraine. And now, in light of sanctions raised against Moscow and the months-long war, energy truly seems to be at the front and center of the conflict. Natural gas prices reached record highs in October 2021, and prices have kept climbing since hitting a new all-time high in March. Prices on the Dutch TTF hub, a European benchmark for natural gas trading, more than tripled between February 16 and March 7 before pulling back. Russia has been accused of using its natural gas as an economic and political bargaining chip. But despite all this, natural gas has continued to flow to Europe, except for a few extreme cases. An example of this would be Germany accusing Moscow of engaging in power play over energy exports. This as Germany, which imports 40% of its gas from Russia, sanctioned Moscow and is now facing record inflation in light of surging prices. Now, Latvia has joined Poland, Bulgaria, Finland, Netherlands, and Denmark in being cut off from Russian gas. Gazprom says it has halted gas supplies to Riga in light of their violation of supply conditions. While Russia did not specify the violations, it had already cut off gas supplies to the other countries for refusing to pay in ruble. Riga had already decided to ban Russian gas imports from January 2023, and last week it even said it was not buying Russian gas from Gazprom. And on Saturday, Latvia said that Gazprom's decision would have little effect on the country. But while many European countries have expressed similar remarks in light of Russia's bans and rises in energy prices, their decisions seem to be going against their national interests, mainly as they have made such remarks while failing to find alternatives to cheap Russian gas. So what seems to be the case is a political decision at the expense of the people who have thus far incurred the unbearable rising costs of living.
Well, no, There is a very high stakes game of geopolitical poker going on here, and Europe does need Russian gas. At the same time, these countries, many of them, I mean, Latvia, Poland, Bulgaria, are in the forefront, Poland, in the forefront of countries that want to defeat Russia, basically. I mean, they believe they have the moral high ground, that they have a good cause, but they really want to stick it to Russia. That is their goal.
Shortly after Russia's military offensive in Ukraine, Western countries began imposing economic sanctions on Moscow. But now Europe's ambitions of securing new energy sources seem to have been scrambled to stave off a crisis.
Russia is the largest exporter of natural gas globally and the second largest producer behind the U.S. For decades, Russian natural gas has powered European homes and industries. In 1968, Austria and the Soviet Union signed a gas deal, and in the early 70s, natural gas shipments began arriving in West Germany. But in 1981, CIA intelligence assessment of a proposed 3,000-mile-long natural gas pipeline from Siberia to Western Germany warned of a trouble ahead. It said the pipeline would be a reliable source of gas for the continent, but would also give the Soviets political leverage over Europe. Now those problems are ringing true. But only since EU and the US have sanctioned Russia, leaving Russia with no choice but to exert energy pressure on Europe. As Russia tightens its chokehold on supplies of natural gas, Europe is looking everywhere for alternatives. Coal is back on the table and deals are being struck with new partners. Despite all this, fears are growing across the continent that a Russian gas cutoff will force governments to ration fuel, risking both jobs and people's lives. Now the race to find alternatives to Russian gas has accelerated, but the question remains as to what happens if the economies tank badly, as they seem to be, and no alternatives are found. Will the EU unity against Russia fall apart?
I do not know the answer to that. Certainly, this puts great stress on European unity. In the long term, there are alternatives to Russian energy. Although Russia, you know, it's attached to Europe, it's part of the greater Eurasia region, and it is a source of not just gas and oil, but many, many other raw materials, which are now being cut off, and Europe and Russia are having a really painful divorce, and it's Europeans. Governments mean for Russia to suffer the pain, but in fact, in a form of blowback, they are suffering it too.
Indications that such unity is bound to fall apart are already emerging. Some EU leaders are already calling for a reconsideration in the bloc strategies. Some have even labeled Europe's attempts of replacing Russian gas as being on a knife on edge. But despite the heavy costs incurred by Europeans, the bloc's leaders seem to have set their eyes on continuing their way, and experts say their problems may only worsen in the future.
People around the world are observing the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. In Iran, mass mourning ceremonies are held each year commemorate Imam Hussein's sacrifices for saving Islam. Yusuf Jalali reports.
This is a story of love. Love for a man who lived 14 centuries ago, but continues to inspire Muslims. He is Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam. Every year on his martyrdom anniversary, Iranians get dressed in black and participate in mass mourning ceremonies to pay tribute to their Imam.
Imam Hussein is a symbol of courage and resistance in the face of cruelty and bullying. On the outside, he was oppressed, but in fact, his martyrdom exposed the fact that the ruler of the time was against Islam and the teaching of the Prophet.
After 14 centuries, Imam Hussein is still touching the hearts and minds of Muslims. This is because of the sacrifices he made for Islam. So every year, we participate in such ceremonies to preserve his ideology.
Imam Hussein was the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. Based on Islamic references, the Shia Imam and 72 of his companions were killed in 680 AD in modern-day Iraqi city of Karbala by the forces of the second Umayyad Caliph, Yazid. The asymmetrical battle was triggered after Imam Hussein refused to pay allegiance to Yazid, for he believed that the Caliph did not exercise true Islam, as taught by the Prophet.
Yazid was a corrupt ruler who indulged in alcohol and lavished money on his personal pleasure. He exercised racial and gender discrimination during his rule.
Imam Hussein felt duty-bound to stand against Yazid to prevent Islam from going astray. Our Imam said he wanted to revive the same version of Islam that was introduced by his grandfather, Prophet Muhammad.
Imam Hussein's sacrifices made him a lasting figure in Islam and a symbol of resistance. That's why Shia Muslims never miss out on the 10-day mourning ceremonies to play their part in keeping Imam Hussein's legacy alive and thank him for saving Islam from distortion and manipulation.
To these people, Imam Hussein was a true freedom seeker to whom justice mattered more than his life. And this is just one reason why the blazes of his love never die down in the hearts of Muslims after 14 centuries. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is the text of the speech delivered on June the 28th, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the head of the judiciary branch and a number of the top officials and employees of the judiciary. Fortunately, Mr. Mohseni, the head of the judiciary, is a faithful revolutionary person. The first point is with regards to the document on fundamental transformation that he talked about. The document on transformation is one of the most progressive documents for change. First, it was prepared, later it was revised during the time of Mr. Raisi. Important points were added and it was completed in that revision. So this document should be acted upon. The esteemed head of the judiciary is committed and he follows up on things. But matters must be followed up on at different levels. Judges, staff and managers must follow up on matters too. But based on the reports that I have received, some are not doing completely the things that one thinks should be done in this area. According to this document, a workforce should be trained. As has been frequently said, personnel need to be trained. Action should be taken in accordance with this document. That is, the judiciary must not be passive in the face of rumours, talk, opposition to it, and the like. There is a straight path in front of it, and it should follow and move along this path with strength. The judiciary should not be influenced by rumours and whether some people like what it has done and some people dislike it. This is the first recommendation.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
My second recommendation is that the issue of fighting corruption should be taken seriously. Corruption exists. Mr. Mohsenir told me something good in one of these recent events. He said apparently this is what he meant, that they had decided to first fight corruption within the judiciary itself. Yes, that's a good action to take. It is not true to say that no corruption exists within the judiciary. Of course, the majority of judges are honest, noble, faithful, hard-working, and truly honourable people. There is no doubt about this, but if there are 10 bad people in a group of 1,000 people, they can harm the rest of the group in terms of their reputation, in terms of work and the like. You have to look for those 10 bad people. However, the main task is to confront the structures that bring corruption.
You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Natural gas is one of several commodities massively impacted by the Russia-Ukraine conflict. The European Union receives about 40% of its natural gas from Russian pipelines, about a quarter of which flow through Ukraine. And now, in light of sanctions raised against Moscow and the months-long war, energy truly seems to be at the front and center of the conflict. Natural gas prices reached record highs in October 2021, and prices have kept climbing since hitting a new all-time high in March. Prices on the Dutch TTF hub, a European benchmark for natural gas trading, more than tripled between February 16 and March 7 before pulling back. Russia has been accused of using its natural gas as an economic and political bargaining chip. But despite all this, natural gas has continued to flow to Europe, except for a few extreme cases. An example of this would be Germany accusing Moscow of engaging in power play over energy exports. This as Germany, which imports 40% of its gas from Russia, sanctioned Moscow and is now facing record inflation in light of surging prices. Now Latvia has joined Poland, Bulgaria, Finland, Netherlands, and Denmark in being cut off from Russian gas. Gazprom says it has halted gas supplies to Riga in light of their violation of supply conditions. While Russia did not specify the violations, it had already cut off gas supplies to the other countries for refusing to pay in ruble. Riga had already decided to ban Russian gas imports from January 2023, and last week it even said it was not buying Russian gas from Gazprom. And on Saturday, Latvia said that Gazprom's decision would have little effect on the country. But while many European countries have expressed similar remarks in light of Russia's bans and rises in energy prices, their decisions seem to be going against their national interests, mainly as they have made such remarks while failing to find alternatives to cheap Russian gas. So what seems to be the case is a political decision at the expense of the people who have thus far incurred the unbearable rising costs of living.
Well, no. There is a very high stakes game of geopolitical poker going on here. And Europe does need Russian gas. At the same time, these countries, many of them, I mean, Latvia, Poland, Bulgaria, are in the forefront, Poland, in the forefront of countries that want to defeat Russia, basically. I mean, they believe they have the moral high ground, that they have a good cause, but they really want to stick it to Russia. That is their goal.
Russia is the largest exporter of natural gas globally and the second largest producer behind the US. For decades, Russian natural gas has powered European homes and industries. In 1968, Austria and the Soviet Union signed a gas deal, and in the early 70s, natural gas shipments began arriving in West Germany. But in 1981, CIA intelligence assessment of a proposed 3,000-mile-long natural gas pipeline from Siberia to Western Germany warned of a trouble ahead. It said the pipeline would be a reliable source of gas for the continent, but would also give the Soviets political leverage over Europe. Now those problems are ringing true, but only since EU and the US have sanctioned Russia, leaving Russia with no choice but to exert energy pressure on Europe. As Russia tightens its chokehold on supplies of natural gas, Europe is looking everywhere for alternatives. Coal is back on the table and deals are being struck with new partners. Despite all this, fears are growing across the continent that a Russian gas cutoff will force governments to ration fuel, risking both jobs and people's lives. Now the race to find alternatives to Russian gas has accelerated, but the question remains as to what happens if the economies tank badly, as they seem to be, and no alternatives are found. Will the EU unity against Russia fall apart?
I do not know the answer to that. Certainly, this puts great stress on European unity. In the long term, there are alternatives to Russian energy. Although Russia, you know, it's attached to Europe, it's part of the greater Eurasia region, and it is a source of not just gas and oil, but many, many other raw materials, which are now being cut off, and Europe and Russia are having a really painful divorce, and it's the Europeans. Governments mean for Russia to suffer the pain, but in fact, in a form of blowback, they are suffering it too.
Indications that such unity is bound to fall apart are already emerging. Some EU leaders are already calling for a reconsideration in the bloc strategies. Some have even labeled Europe's attempts of replacing Russian gas as being on a knife on edge. But despite the heavy costs incurred by Europeans, the bloc's leaders seem to have set their eyes on continuing their way, and experts say that problems may only worsen in the future.
The U.S. economy has entered a recession. Based on the official definition of a recession, when the economy contracts for two consecutive quarters, that is the definition of a recession. Recession fears for the U.S. have been ongoing for some time. One of the factors which speeded up the decline of the economy was energy prices, which have affected the prices of goods, from food to basic stuff, leading to inflation. The U.S. is experiencing over 9% inflation, something it has not experienced in over four decades.
The American economy is being bashed from pillar to post right now by a whole range of factors, but certainly it's going into recession because there's severe headwinds being caused by, first of all, the government cutting back on its spending in a ridiculous attempt to balance its budget, which it should not be trying to do in the first place, and then high interest rates compared to what they have been in the recent past, even though they're below the rate of inflation, and meaning that households are no longer borrowing, and in fact they're probably paying their level of debt down.
The U.S. president has been trying to portray this as a temporary phase, which the U.S. economy will overcome.
We're not going to be in a recession, in my view. The employment rate is still one of the lowest we've had in history. It's in the 3.6 area. We still find ourselves with people investing. My hope is we go from this rapid growth to steady growth.
But as things are going, especially the war in Ukraine, this is anything but temporary. The mayor of New York has painted an even bleaker picture. He has said that we are in a financial crisis like you can never imagine. Wall Street is collapsing. We are in a recession. The poor state of the U.S. economy is typical to many economies around the world, especially the ones in Europe. One of the telltale signs is the price of energy, which has affected Europe so badly that economies in countries like Germany, the UK, France, and Italy are all experiencing GDP contractions or slow economic growth. The Ukraine conflict is definitely one factor weighing down on the economies, but it would be wrong to blame the negative economic performance just on the war itself.
No, I don't think the government's done a good job, because all last year this began and they did nothing because they thought it was temporary. And, you know, during the pandemic, everybody got passed out money, including stores and all of that. And so it's like too much money floating around. They were very late to the game. And I don't think the administration's really put it as a very high priority.
Consumers are being bashed by inflation running about 5% per year higher than wage rises. Now, in that situation, consumers are likely to be trying to do everything they can not to spend.
The U.S., similar to Germany, is carrying a deficit. That is when companies import more and export less, dynamic that weighs down on the GDP. Yet the future looks bleak. As economies are still facing the COVID pandemic, with supply chains not fully recovered, the U.S. is pursuing an aggressive policy towards China, which involves a trade war. Europe is bound to follow the U.S. lead, which can only make matters worse for their economies.
The United States has given the green light to more arms sales to East Asian nations in a bid to counter China. The package of arms and munitions, which is worth $900 million, has been approved by the State Department and is set to be sold to Australia, Japan, and Singapore. A potential deal with Australia includes 80 Lockheed Martin precision-guided air-to-surface missiles and associated equipment. The deal, which is set to be worth $235 million, will allow Australian jets to stay outside the range of the opponent's air defense units while launching attacks. Back in April, Canberra approved that $2.44 billion US dollars worth of, quote, improved weapon capabilities be quickly delivered to the country from the US. Australian officials claim they need the equipment to meet the country's increasingly complex and challenging strategic environment. The package for Japan would include 150 advanced medium-range air-to-air missiles. The missiles, which are to be installed on the country's F-35 fighter jets, are worth more than $290 million. Singapore will receive $630 million to supply its fighter jets with air-to-air missiles. Australia, Japan, and Singapore are considered U.S. allies in the Indo-Pacific region against what Washington describes as the rising threat from China.
Yeah, this one, these sales of weapon to Japan and Singapore basically came after a speech of General Milley, where he complained about the aggression, the posture of the Chinese military, especially the pilot, when they intercept any aircraft from the United States or from their ally. So they said that they wanted to give a weapon to be effective against possible interception of aircraft.
The The sales of advanced weapons to U.S. allies in the region come amid rising rivalries between the United States and China. Washington is pursuing a policy of cooperation and coordination with regional countries against China. It aims to push these countries to contribute more to joint regional military programs. It's now believed that the United States, which has been the preeminent military power in that region for decades, can no longer guarantee by itself a regional balance of power. Global geopolitics is changing, contrary to the expectations and demands of politicians in Washington. It's now an open secret that China is a rising military and economic powerhouse in the East Asia region. With major advances in missile technology, naval forces and intelligence, China is well on its way to becoming world-class military power. It has already surpassed Washington in several areas. And apart from that, China has massive economic ties with the regional countries.
With the exception of four countries that are already, for historical reason, very much linked to the United States from a military point of view, it means South Korea, Japan, New Zealand, and Australia. All of the other countries here are quite difficult that they can enter in a kind of alliance, a military alliance, as the NATO in Europe. There are many reasons. There are political reasons, but also economic reasons, because China is growing so fast, and their economy, the economy of these countries, are very much interconnected with China one.
China is concerned about the belligerent rhetoric coming from the U.S. Beijing and Washington have been at odds over several issues in recent years, including trade and the South China Sea. But Beijing's ultimate concern is Washington's meddling in Chinese Taipei. China has made it clear that it will not allow the self-ruled island to secede. It has already strongly warned against a potential visit by the U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And the dispute over the strategic island may prove to be a real challenge between the two superpowers in the coming years.
Tensions are rising between China and the United States. Beijing has issued a stern warning against a potential visit by the U.S. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi to Chinese Taipei. Beijing says that Washington will be responsible for the consequences of the possible visit. Chinese side has made it clear to the U.S. that it is firmly opposed to Speaker Pelosi's visit to Taiwan. We are fully prepared. If the U.S. goes its own way, China will certainly take firm and forceful measures to safeguard its national sovereignty and territorial integrity, and the U.S. should be held responsible for any serious consequences.
So the idea that she would visit Taiwan at this point is intended to provoke a crisis with China. Recall that the U.S. and the British forced NATO expansion, totally ignoring Russia's security interests, with the so-called reverse Cuba Missile Crisis, whose purpose was to provoke Russia into acting against the neo-Nazi regime in Ukraine in order to justify the wildly illegal and self-defeating sanctions, economic warfare against Russia.
Analysts believe the latest warning by China against the visit of the U.S. House Speaker to Chinese Taipei was harsher in tone and very stern. Some say the threats contained an allusion to a possible military confrontation between China and the U.S., and that is why reservations have been raised in Washington about the visit. The U.S. House Speaker was scheduled to visit Taipei earlier in April, but the trip was apparently canceled after she contracted COVID. However, some reports say that Pelosi will make the controversial visit in August. Apart from top Democrats, some hawkish Republicans have also come out in favor of the visit, stressing that this visit is a show of support against China.
This is a very serious crisis. How China responds is very difficult to foresee, but it's a moment in which the literally madmen and women in the West are trying to do to China what they are in the process of doing against Russia.
There are few people today who doubt that China is a global superpower, both militarily and economically. In terms of the economy, China's economy has continued to grow over the past few decades and is well on its way to overtake the U.S.'s by the year 2030. In terms of military and technology, China is now a superpower on par with the U.S., although Washington's military budget is still the largest in the world. Politicians in Washington who are still dreaming of a unipolar world order that came into existence following the collapse of the Soviet Union do not tolerate the rise of China. The first sign of the unease began to emerge after the former U.S. President Barack Obama announced his pivot to Asia policy, which was meant to counter China's rising influence. Obama's successors, Trump and Biden, have continued Washington's anti-China rhetoric. The two superpowers are locked over a number of issues, including trade and the South China Sea. The bone of contention is Chinese Taipei, and Beijing has made it very clear that it will not allow the self-ruled island to become independent.
It really can only be averted at this point by the nations of the West recognizing that they have no solution to the now terminal breakdown of the dollar system, the hyperinflationary collapse, other than sitting down with Russia and with China in a new Bretton Woods conference to replace the now completely broken and destroyed Bretton Woods system that was set up by Franklin Roosevelt and has been systemically taken apart over these last 30 years.
Chinese Taipei is under China's sovereignty and under the One China policy. The United States and other countries have recognized that sovereignty. But Washington, in violation of its own stated policy and in an attempt to irritate Beijing, has increased diplomatic contact with the Chinese Taipei.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: الصدقة دواء منجح، وأعمال العباد في عاجلهم، نصب أعينهم في آجالهم.
Imam Ali, peace be upon him, said, "Charity is an effective cure, and the actions of people in their present life will be before their eyes in the next life."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam is truly something that is magnificent. We find that the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam has been being spoken about for hundreds and perhaps thousands of years. And despite being spoken about by individuals, we find that there is not a lack of words and there is not a vacancy for things to still be spoken about. This is truly something which is amazing. And as far as historical figures, this is something that is very rarely, if ever, seen. But we find that the Ahlul Bayt and the Messenger of Allah, and in this case, Imam Ali alayhi salam, these are individuals whom the more you talk about them, the more you can continue to talk about them. Allahu Akbar. It's really quite beautiful. Now, when talking about this universal persona which was connected to the divine, Imam Ali alayhi salam speaks about these certain people who in every era are the protectors of the message of Allah. In every era, they are the protectors of the divine religion, the divine commandments, and the divine secrets of Allah and the prophets and the imams. When describing these individuals in every era, or that are present in every era, Imam Ali alayhi salam says that knowledge has led them towards real, true, pure understanding. And so these individuals have associated themselves with the spirit of conviction, yaqeen, as is known in Arabic. They take what the easygoing regard as hard, and they endear what the ignorant take as strange. It is interesting, in one of the previous programs we had said that these individuals who are the connection between us average human beings and the Ahlul Bayt, and we find that these statements said by the first divinely appointed Imam, Imam Ali alayhi salam, over 1,000 years ago apply so beautifully and perfectly to these individuals. Knowledge has led them towards true understanding, and they are associated with the spirit of yaqeen, and they take easy what the easygoing regard as hard. We find how many trials and tribulations did Imam Khomeini had to go through, yet we never saw him complain, we never saw him frown, we never saw him upset. Rather, he was like a mountain, strong in his position. And they endear what the ignorant take as strange. Another one of the beautiful qualities of Imam Khomeini, a beautiful, profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRib English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم إن قلوب المخبتين إليك والها وسبل الراغبين
O Allah, verily the hearts of those who surrender to Thee are full of passionate love. The path of those who long for Thee is the straight, true road. The instructions given by those who lead on Thee are distinct and precise. The minds of those who are aware of Thy reality are filled with awe and reverence. The call of those who invite unto Thee is loud and clear, and the doors of approval are kept open for them. Whoso submits his supplication to Thee receives a favorable answer. Whoso turns repentant unto Thee gets acceptance and amnesty. Whoso bursts into tears in fear of Thy punishment obtains mercy. Whoso seeks redress from Thee finds the required assistance at his disposal. Whoso asks for Thy help procures the aid as a gift. Thy promise made with Thy servants is fulfilled. Whoso asks for pardon of his errors finds them reduced to nothing. Whoso does everything for Thy sake discovers that each and every deed has been preserved. The means of livelihood available to the created being come from Thee like a rainfall, and in addition, many recurring favors and bounties reach them in regular succession. The sin of those who ask for forgiveness are overlooked. The wants and needs of all that which has been created by Thee are properly satisfied. Those who put forward genuine demands get more than they ask for, one after the other, again and again. For the hungry, wholesome food is arranged. For the thirsty, clean water is available in abundance.
now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Amir al-Mu'mineen's journey towards Basra in Iraq, in one of the journeys. His army had camped in a place where a group of Hujjaj were passing by in their caravan. When they were told that this is the campsite of Ali's army, they have settled down here for resting before continuing, they diverted slightly to go and see their imam. And then people gathered outside the tent of Amir al-Mu'mineen, waiting for him to come out. Abdullah ibn Ja'far, the friend, the cousin, and a very close friend of Amir al-Mu'mineen, was very free with Ali. Nobody was that much free with him because of their closeness. So he came inside and he saw Amir al-Mu'mineen, Khalifat al-Muslimin, sitting on the ground, doing what? Repairing his sandal, which was broken, stitching the strap of the sandal. Can you find any leader in the world like that? The entire Muslim empire of the time in his hands. He has thousands of people around him in that campsite, even relatives and friends and sons. But now that one strap of the sandal has broken, he sits down himself and starts stitching it. And Abdullah bin Abbas, a cousin, a friend, like a brother, he says, Ali, what are you doing? From his perspective, Ali could spend time in more productive things. What are you doing? There are people who love you. They are waiting outside to see you. Imam didn't reply, continued his work until he's finished. Then he said, put the pair of sandals there. And now he asked Abdullah ibn Abbas, قَيِّمْهَا. Abdullah ibn Abbas, give me a value for this. What is the worth of this pair of sandals? It was so used and torn, worn out. Abdullah ibn Abbas says he doesn't have any value. Not even one dinar or dirham, whatever is the shorter amount of the currency those days. Less than that. This is where Amir al-Mu'mineen says to him, by Allah, this pair of sandals that you say is worthless is more dearer to me than ruling over you and your people unless I am able to establish haq and justice in society. You talk about hukumat, power and government on one hand, and this worn out pair of sandals on the other hand. Ali says, I prefer this over ruling you unless I am able to establish justice and right among you.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Declassified. Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and welcome to the latest edition of Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. The new Prime Minister of the Zionist entity in Palestine is Yair Lapid. He's the 14th Prime Minister to head the regime since the creation of the entity in 1948. Like all the